This is Jaquan, and this is Foundation Lesson Number 58, Kumo D, the coolest of the cool. Now, Kumo D is one third of the Treacherous Three, of course, along with LA Sunshine and Special K. But he's also one third of what I've spoken about on several lessons, what history or the people have deemed as one third of the first lyrical trinity in rap music. And that trinity consists of Grandmaster Caz of the Cold Crush Brothers, Grandmaster Melly Mel of Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, and of course Kumo D of the Treacherous Three. Three great and highly influential MCs from three great and highly influential groups. And I would say that if you have not seen or heard my piece on Rakim, Why Rakim is the God MC, it's almost imperative that you listen to or view that first, because the context that I give of why Rakim is great is directly related to Kumo D and a style that Kumo D was doing very early on. I've said on a few recent lessons that where Kumo D might have exhibited this particular style and wordplay 30% of the time or 40% of the time, Rakim exhibited this style more than 95% of the time. Now, as we get into some early Kumo D rhyme schemes and rhyme patterns, I'll touch very briefly on how these were actually patterns that Rakim adopted or adapted later on for his style. But if you really, really want a really good breakdown of it, the Rakim piece is definitely a piece that you will want to check out prior to this one. So Mo D started rhyming in 1977, influenced by Lovebug Starsky and DJ Hollywood, two rhyming DJs. And as a result of that, his early style was one of call and response and crowd participation primarily.
It don't stop. You're going on and on and on and on like a hot butter on. Say what's the popcorn to the beat, y'all? The beat, y'all. Don't stop, y'all. I think that, y'all. You say it's going down. Stop, because you're rocking to the rhythm of the rock MCs. Trying to rock the vibe, fuck the MCs. Trying to rock the vibe, I like that, y'all. It don't stop. A young ladies, I like a young ladies like to see Mo D on the mic. And you can rock your fast, and rock your slow, and rock your good just to let you know what that I really don't care who you are. Cause if you ever battle me, you go a little too far like that, y'all. It don't stop. You say it cut the record like cake. I give a Reg a little disco brave. The man got speeded, got what it takes. And crazy yeah, in a backup mistake that with the fast ass MCs at the class. You say you never heard a man talk so fast. From the super scooper party pooper man with all the super duper disco brakes. And what it takes, a man who never makes mistakes. In fact, I know I'm not a boy, the baddest man you ever thought. Money making earthquake, and man who gets the party. MOOLMOE. And don't you forget the D-E-E, a young ladies.
Okay, so a few things that we can extract from that track automatically. First thing we heard was, this was 1978, the fast rhyme style that was used on a new rap language. That is a style that really changed the game for many years after. We'll talk about that a little later. But that particular style and that particular rhyme itself, you know, the super scooper party pooper man with all the super duper disco breaks and what it takes, actually on this 1978 performance used 2 years before it appeared on record in 1980. Now, it was groundbreaking in 1980 and again, a game changer when it appeared in 1980. But you can see that in 78 it existed. Now, Mo had only been rhyming since 77. So somewhere within that year, he created that fast rap style. Now, additionally, you heard God Make Me Funky by the Headhunters. And that was one of Mo's favorite breaks to rhyme over. He would slow down that Headhunters break. And we'll discuss that a little later as well. But like I said, already we're seeing just from that small excerpt of 78, a few things that would manifest themselves in later years to come. Now, if I had to name the strengths of Kumo D, I would definitely say wordplay and vocabulary first. Dominant voice as well, but his wordplay specifically, the way that he approached rhyming, you know, Mo is one who discusses rhyming on a scholastic level. And the time I've talked to Mo D several times, the first interview that I ever had with him was probably 2002 or so. And we were on the phone for 3 hours because, you know, Mo is an MC's MC. And he really approaches rhyming and analyzing others' rhymes and writing rhymes much in the way that I do. So we definitely connected on that level of our appreciation for what I always talk about is the poetic value in rhymes and in MCs. And that's a word that he uses often, poetic value, when he rates MCs. So his poetic value was always very high. As well, he always had a deep and commanding voice, and his enunciation was on point. That was always important for me. I need to be able to know what the MC is saying, because in my very early days of being a fan of this music, I wanted to be able to say those rhymes out loud, to spit those rhymes on the bus or walk into the store or whatever. And I needed to know very clearly everything that the MC was saying, and Kumo D exhibited that very early on. Now, there are three things that I like to talk about that Mo D did that were groundbreaking and that he doesn't always get proper credit for, in my opinion. The first one is definitely the fast rap style that, you know, it went around the world. It morphed into, you know, different styles. People added on to it and put their own cadences on it. But it can be traced back to Mo D, and on record it can be traced back to the new rap language. Also, as far as battling, Mo D changed the very essence of what a rap battle was. If you go back, you know, before the infamous Mo D and Busy B battle, when MCs battled, it was just about who said the best rhyme in the opinion of the crowd. You know, an MC would spit his rhyme, his opponent would come on and spit their rhyme, and the volume of the applause from the crowd was what dictated who the victor was. But with Mo, he got very personal with the Busy B rhyme, and I mean very personal, and it actually it morphed into many things over the years. But the actual whole battle circuit that you have now, which was an underground thing until, you know, a few years ago, is gaining a lot of traction at this point, but is based strictly on the personal attack. Now in this present time, it's gotten very, very violent and a lot more personal. But before the Mo D and Busy B battle, you didn't really get into the personal, the very personal things about a person. And I've heard Busy B is a perfect quote, and I agree with it. He said, well, Mo wasn't rapping, he was snapping. You know, and snapping, of course, for those that don't know, is a street term that's basically, you know, almost like when you play the dozens, or what we would call cracking on each other, or whatever, you know, taking shots at each other. Mo took battling into that direction, and that became a staple in the battle, as opposed to just my best rhymes, your best rhymes, let's who has a better rhyme. It became a thing of, let me see how I can tear you down personally with some things that are true and not flattering about you. He changed the game with that. And lastly, he was relevant in all three of the eras that I talk about in most of my lessons. I talk about the original school, what I call the middle school, and then the golden era. And he wasn't a star in all three eras by any means, but the first rap recordings came out in 79. By 80, he was making recordings with the Treacherous Three. That lasted till around 85. In 86, he had his first solo venture, which was Go See the Doctor, which was definitely successful. And then by 87, he's releasing his debut album. And in the same year, he releases his second album, which is the one that makes him a star. And the momentum of that takes him well into the early part of the 90s. Outside of Dougie Fresh, and to a much smaller degree, Spoonie G. Spoonie G never made it to stardom and being a household name, but he did put out product, and product that was, you know, it was selling and keeping his name relevant. Outside of that, I can't think of many MCs or recording artists that had that much of a presence in all three eras. You know, there was a thing generally where recording artists was good for a couple albums. That was always the curse in the early days of rap that we talked about, is that outside of three albums, and three was very lucky for most artists. They couldn't maintain their momentum outside of three. By the time they got to that third album, most of the time they would take some kind of misstep or fall after the third one, or most times before the third one. So for those guys to represent in the first era where you weren't even really making full length albums, and then to be able to persevere and sustain all the way up into, like I said, the so-called golden era, and then on into the 90s, that's a hell of a feat, and Mo D can claim that. Now again, from the 78 clip that we heard, you heard a pretty much basic style outside of the fast rap, as I stated earlier. So Mo says that there were two events that changed his life and made him want to take this seriously and also step his game up as an MC. Now, the first one was seeing Grandmaster Flash Backspin. He said when he saw that, it absolutely blew his mind. The other was seeing Grandmaster Flash in the three MCs. Wasn't even the Furious Five or the Furious Four yet. It was Grandmaster Flash with Melly Mel, his brother Creole, and Keith Cowboy. Said he saw him at the Autobahn Ballroom around 1978 or so. In my written interview with Kumo D, he describes in depth how the whole scene of seeing Flash in the three MCs just totally transformed him, how incredible it was. It was a night where there was an alternating DJ set with Love Buzz Starsky DJing for a couple hours, and then Flash doing a couple hours. And when Flash got on with the three MCs, he talks about how Creole did this thing with the echo chamber and just how powerful Creole was on the echo chamber at that time, and how it was something to behold. And right there in Manhattan, they really hadn't seen it done on a level like that. Cowboy did his call and response and spelled his name out, and just the whole magic of the whole thing was something that just literally blew Mo D's mind. But the other moment that made him say, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, and I got to expand my game and up my game, was a rhyme that Melly Mel said. And it was his Africa rhyme where he said, I'll make Alaska hot and make Africa cold. Stop Nat King Cole from playing the role. I'm Melly Mel, rocking them well from the top of the World Trade to the depths of hell. Now, that may not seem like the most groundbreaking rhyme today, but if you're talking about 1978, where cats were saying the most rudimentary and elementary rhymes, that was a great rhyme. And it was one that really caught Mo. And Mo said that Mel said that rhyme right after Cowboy passed the mic to him. And he said he was just standing there in awe with his mouth open. And when he heard Mel speak and do those, it's not really a metaphor, but the polarity of it, of, you know, I'll make Alaska hot and Africa cold. He said he just, right there, he said, okay, that's it. I need to improve my game on the microphone and improve my pen game. And at that moment, he became a fan of Mel. And again, he said that he knew that in some way, rap music, again, no records have been made. Nobody's made a rap record. But he knew that this is what he wanted to do with the rest of his life. And if you listen to Mo D's output after 78, 79, you'll see that he did just that. He improved his pen game.
Bounce around the walls and back out the door. Try to catch a cabin if you want more. If you can spin, I'll come again and give you rap.
Busted.
Woman to stay, some woman to leave. But none of those in the business find it hard to believe. How can any one man perfect the crap by just rhyming on the mic and not singing laugh? Well, I'm Kumo D, and what I want to say is I can rap shot roll till the break of day. I am souped up in my own way. Now let me read you a bit of my resume. Handsome as a sailor in his uniform. A new college student living on a dorm. Promoted movies well known as that you know. And my mother acted in The Secret Storm. A passionate companion when it comes to love. My ears speaking, tell you what you're thinking of. And I'm very good at fighting and push come to shove. I can meet you in the ring with a boxing glove. And when it comes to brain, my mind is right on track. I got the physical strength of a lumberjack. Well, I can dance, I can sing, and also acting is much more to me than a Big Mac. I got the two beef patties and a special sauce. What my brain maintains makes me the boss. So at the salad's toss and the meal's full course, because on your lettuce cheese for your biting MC. Big Mac like these are your favorite sauce. I like that, y'all. I like that, y'all. I'm 100 miles an hour with lightning speed and power. The sweetest of the sweet MCs looks sour. Timber as a tower because I devour. but now I'm a mater. Some say I'm a mater, like you say patata, and I say potato, tomato, tomato. My dad is up to data, but something is the matter. For those of you say that it could be opposite of mama, the kids are wonderama. I'm very good at acting and very good at drama. I confuse you with a period, a colon, and a comma. Cause when I'm rhyming and you and y'all take a look and then you will applaud. When you're rhyming that and then what I do, then you look at me and you say to you. And when they say who's the best MC to you, you look at me, then you say Melly. Who is Kumo D? Definitely X-T-O-P. So such shade, my mellow ski.
Yeah, so that was a 1981 performance with the Treacherous 3, a live performance. As you can see, not only did he improve his pen game in that short, 3 years, he's already dissing Melly Mel, and there's some static between he and Mel. Now, what Mo told me was that by the time they had gotten to Enjoy Records, Flash and the Furious were just leaving Enjoy. They'd only done Super Rapid on Enjoy in 79. Treacherous 3 get there in 80. By that time, Flash and the Furious 5 are moving to Sugar Hill to do Freedom. But what Mo said was that it seemed like every time the Furious made something hot, the Treacherous 3 would come right behind him and make something hot. So the streets started to create this rivalry, because at the time, you were talking about the early days of rap records, and most rap records were very, very, like, you know, nursery rhyme, basic. A lot of them were parody records. You know, we were only not even a full year into rap recordings. The streets had already seen that lyrically, the Furious 5 and the Treacherous 3 were top echelon, upper echelon, as far as lyrical ability and what they were putting out on records lyrically. So Mo said that they never wanted a rivalry again. You know, Mel is the reason that Mo rhymes. But the streets had created this rivalry and comparison of the groups, and he said it became static between the groups, and it was more energy coming from the Furious Five of, you know, this conflict of you know, wanting to battle or wanting some kind of conflict.
Three MCs, we dedicate this part to the Furious Five MCs. You know we want to battle. They called us out, and now they say they don't want to battle, but we gonna make them come in the place of these Treacherous MCs. Yo, gonna rock, gonna shock to the beat. Take a little time. Kumo D, Special K, and LA Sunshine. Mel and Mel, Mr. Ness, Raheem, and the rest. You know we'll take y'all on out. We'll take y'all out. We'll take the five out. We'll take y'all out. We'll
any
take
day.
The five out.
Any day.
We'll
any day, baby.
Out.
Any day, any day, bring them niggas and we'll take them out. We'll take them right on out. Yeah, you know.
So, yeah, it was basically a rivalry between these groups for quite some time. And specifically between Mo and Mel, there was some static. And Sal Albertallo from the Disco Fever, the owner of the Disco Fever, told me they actually battled in the Fever back in 83, Mo and Mel. And I asked Mo about that. And he said, yeah. In fact, I'll read directly from the interview. His answer was, yeah, it was 83. We were going at it up until 85. I rarely talk about it because, for one, I don't consider it a real battle. And two, Mel is straight up my hero. I give him props for setting the tone, and I feel he got a raw deal, the rawest deal in hip-hop. To create on that level and not reap the benefits, that's like a motherfucker creating the computer chip and Bill Gates getting the credit. I always found that interesting, that as much as there was static in the groups and they called each other out on stage and, you know, they had their internal stuff, Mo always had that respect for Mel, where it was like, look, you know, this cat is my hero. And, you know, even the battle we had wasn't really a battle. I got too much respect, you know, for this cat to even take it to that level. Now, going back a bit, you know, it was also interesting to me, too. Just, you know, Mo is a very interesting cat to me in general, you know, just as a person, as well as an MC. And in talking to him, I was asking him about the origins of his name. And of course, the Mo D part is, you know, just a breakdown of his actual government name, the Mo D. But the cool part, and this was very interesting to me, he said that the cool part was like the opposite of what the streets thought were cool. You know, he said growing up in Harlem as he did, you know, the Nicky Barnes and the whole drug scene and everything that was going on was very popular. And the whole street scene and the drug scene and everything that was going on in these urban areas was what was seen as cool. And he said he purposely adapted and adopted cool to say, look, you know, it's cool to be intelligent and to not drink or do drugs. Like Mo said, he never drank, he never did drugs. And, you know, he was a clean cut cat during that point. And he wanted to show that, no, what these guys are doing is not cool. It's cooler to be intelligent. It's cooler to be drug free and alcohol free and represent a different image than the image that's always placed upon us in these urban areas. So I always thought that was a very interesting and pretty dope take on how he adopted cool for his name. It's not the average, you know, cat just trying to be cool like we try to be cool, you know, in the hood type cool. You know, he took it somewhere else, and that was very admirable, I thought. Okay, so the fast rhymes or the fast rap. He said that the genesis of the fast rap was, he said, he was sitting on the toilet writing rhymes, which he said was one of his, you know, places that he usually wrote. And he said that he was listening to a tape of the three MCs and flashing the three MCs. And he said that Creole was saying a rhyme about his brother Melly Mel. And it went something to the effect of, while other MCs trying to prove a point, Melly Mel is busy being the joint. But he said the way that he said it, the cadence that he said it in, was like a flurry almost. And he was like, man, he should have kept going with that. Why didn't he keep going? And he just, from there, he added on and said, okay, I'm going to write a rhyme in that same cadence, but keep it going. You know, where Creole stopped, I'm going to continue to go in that flurry style. And that was the birth of that particular style, which, you know, we saw manifested in 1980 on the New Rap Language, which was the flip side of Spoonie G's Love Rap. Now, something else about Mo and just Mo in general, but Mo and the fast rap. Generally, when he would say his fast rhymes, he would do it over a slow beat, which is ironic, but his favorite break beat was God Make Me Funky by the Headhunters. And it was already a slow break, but he would always get the DJ to slow it down even more. And his reasoning behind that was, he said that he was never the kind of guy that wanted to make you dance. He wasn't that kind of MC. Again, I can't stress enough, Mo is very much a lyricist and poet. He's very much into wordplay and the poetic value of a rhyme. So he said he never wanted you to dance. He wants you to hear his bars and hear what he's saying, hear his metaphors, everything in the rhyme. So he purposely would put the slowest beats on and get the DJ to slow the beat down. And that's proven in that 1978 clip that I played in the first few minutes of him doing the fast rap over that particular break in 78. And he said he always would do that when they did it live to a slow beat. And he always liked to rhyme over God Make Me Funky, slow down. Now, another point of interest with that was, before Special K joined the Treacherous Three, it was Spoonie G, L.A. Sunshine, and Kumo D. That's the original Treacherous Three. Spoonie went off to make a solo record, and there was a space in the group. Mo D went to the same high school as Special K. Special K's from the Bronx, but they went to the same high school. They knew of each other. They knew that they both rhymed, but there was no rivalry or friendship or anything else. One day in the lunchroom, Mo D is doing his fast rhymes. After he does his little display or exhibition, K pulls him to the side and whispers to him and starts saying a fast rhyme. And it was actually the rhyme that you heard K say in the New Rap Language. Undefeated, never beat it, rhymes all guaranteed, wheeling, dealing, casting over, booty feeling. You know, it was that particular rhyme. And, you know, long story short, Mo invites K to join, says, hey, we got a spot in the group. They become the Treacherous Three. And because Spoonie had went off to make Spoon and Rap on Peter Brown's Sound of New York label, there's that separation in the group. Then Spoonie wants to come back once he sees K is there. And the way that they solve the whole thing is say, look, you know, your uncle's Bobby Robinson. You're about to make this record on Enjoy. You do one side, we do the flip side. Flip side was a New Rap Language.
We rock and don't stop. Well, it's a super cat, the fantastic at the island, toast and pistol, straight to techno, bang, and the tree, is the way we get our kick. We're qualifying, rectifying, rocking till the day we're dying. Every time you're screaming, crying, we're here with no denying.
We hold our honor and our pride.
To take the step to keep stride.
Set down rules, you will apply.
We're gonna take it for a ride.
Before we rockin', that's some fun, let's introduce us one by one.
I'm
2K, I'm on display, I rock and pull the USA.
At least I shine a rock and mine, I do it to you every time.
Remember me, I'm Zemo D, the man, that's the T.O.P. I'm Spoony G, as you can see, I rock the world society. And at the end, you will agree, nobody rock the mic like me.
But that's 2K, since I'm O.D., you add us up with Legal 3.
And on the mic, we turn it out, your latest mic without a doubt. And if you don't believe it's you, just check out how we rock for you.
And if you don't believe it's you, just check out how we rock for you.
And if you don't believe it's you, just check out how we rock for you. Got a lot of class, so rock around and make it fast.
The super scooper party pooper, man, with all the super duper disco breaks and what it takes. Man, never make mistakes. And rapping low, I'm not a bull, the baddest man you ever saw. The money making earthquake, man, who gets the party shaking.
Undefeated, never beaten, never cheated, but succeeded. If I needed to believe it, rhymes on guaranteed. Wheeling, dealing, women stealing, Casanova booty, feeling, understanding, rapper, man, and rocking on it. That's the man. And
communication, stimulation, man, who's gonna rock the nation? Rhyme, rhyme, battle time, my opponent, he's a man. I'm not the baddest, not the baddest. When I win, I am the gladdest. No beginner, not a sinner on the mic. I'm just a winner.
Seen the finger popping, all I stop it, man. Who gets the body rocking? I'm so vicious, and what this is to the youngest. I'm the this is good love, and I always make her always do good numbers. And I'm very, 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 yeah, my favorite flavor's cherry. Oh my God.
Yes, indeed. The new rap language. I mean, what can you say about that? That, you know, is a game changer. And it wouldn't hurt at all if you checked out my Treacherous 3 lesson. I believe that was within the first five or six lessons that I did. The lessons were actually supposed to be like cliff notes. I used to call them rap cliff notes. And they were like 10 minutes long. You know, some of them were eight to 10 minutes long, no more than 12 minutes. And then when it got up to groups like the Furious Five with such long discographies, they were like an hour. And I was like, well, nobody wants to hear me talk for an hour. I can't do that. And then, you know, it started being necessary. You know, people were saying, hey, man, I wish that was longer. So it started being necessary to include more information. So I say all that to say the Treacherous 3 piece may be 20 minutes, you know, maybe even be smaller than that. But I'm going to redo those first ones to make them full pieces. But for right now, if you go back to the Treacherous 3 lesson, I'll get a lot more in depth there about the new rap language, because this is a Kumo D piece. Impossible to talk about him without talking about his genesis with the Treacherous, but I don't want to get bogged down too much with that, because I did talk about it in the Treacherous 3 lesson. Battling, you know, I talked about how Mo changed the game of battling forever. Again, from what I know, from my studying, from my list of tapes and just going back and listening, I never heard anybody get as personal with the battle as Mo D. It literally set a precedent. You know, he even talked about Busy taking rhymes from Spoony G and not paying him for them. I mean, you know, he got very, very much below the belt and personal, and it just wasn't done that way up until that point. And, you know, one thing I love about doing these is a cat like Mo D, the average person, and even people who consider themselves, you know, really, really hip-hop fans, a lot of them have no idea about these things that are outside of How You Like Me Now, outside of the battle with LL, outside of Go See the Doctor, and outside of self-destruction verse. You know, people don't know anything pre his solo work. Many people who really consider themselves hip hop heads. So I really like, you know, kind of doing the archaeological work of, you know, digging these gems up and presenting these gems that, you know, aren't necessarily known to a lot of people.
Come on and turn it out, just like I did. We got the Gold Crush Force coming out, and we got another MC group coming up. If Busy B gonna sign off, see all the people later out there, the place to be, and I'll be back up later just to point that shit over my head. Y'all pick it on now. All right, now before I go, let me hear y'all say, ho, ho,
ho, ho,
ho, ho, ho. Now say, la, 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 la. Say it again, go on. La, 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 la. That's it for me, son of Sam. Okay, on the boys. And all the party people in Manhattan, Boogie Down, Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn, I love you, each and every one of y'all.
Once again, MC Busy B with Cool DJ AJ. Coming up next from the Treacherous 3 MCs, Kumo D.
And I'm going with 1-2-1-2, party people in the place to be. My name is MC Kumo D from the Treacherous 3. My man LA Sunshine in the place to be. We gonna get a little something straight here in the place to be. Don't worry about it, DJ Lee, on the place to be. We gonna get a little something straight in the place to be.
One, two,
my man Busy B Starsky. How many people think Busy B Starsky rocked the house? I hear that in the place to be.
Yeah.
But if y'all notice it or not, you know, I heard a lot of shit, you know, Busy B's popping shit, saying he'll take out any MC and all that.
I
give it to the man, he know how to rock the crowd, but when it come to having rhyme, no way he can fuck around, and I'm gonna prove that right now. One for the treble, two for the bang, come on Easy Lee and let's rock the plane. One, two, doing the do now. Hold on, Busy B, I don't mean to be bold, but put that ball, did it, ball bullshit on hold. We gonna get right down to the nitty gritty. Gonna tell you a little something why you ain't shit. It ain't an empty top that you don't hug. You even bitch your name from the love bug. And not a fight a nigga's name, it's some low-down
shut
shit.
Up, shut up.
If you was money, man, you'd be counterfeit. I gotta give it to you, though you can rock. But everybody know you're on the furious jock. And I remember Busy from the olden times, when my man Mooney G used to sell your rhymes. Remember that rhyme called Diddy Bar Diddy? Man, goddamn, that shit was a pity. Too hot to trot, hit to rock a spot. Spoonie G rockin' whether you like it or not. He paid for the rhyme, asked for it twice. He said, Spoonie G, I'll buy it any price. When Spoonie finally sold it, oh, what a relief. Busy B stole it like a fucking thief. Came out rockin', the party's yours. Got everybody thinking that that time's yours. Every time I hear it, I throw a fit. Party after party, the same old shit. Record after record, rhyme after rhyme. Always wanna know your zodiac sign. He changed the shit to the favorite gene. Come on, Busy B, tell me what that means. Hold on, brother man, don't you say nothing. I'm not finished yet, I gotta tell you something. Too hot to trot, I'm hit to rock a spot. I'm gonna rock your ass whether you like it or not. He made it I'll up take a title day. Right on the spot. How can I take a title you ain't got? You're not number one, you're not even the best. And you can't win no real MC contest. Celebrity clubs and bullshit like those. Those are kind of stuff that everybody knows. Celebrity clubs are those the kind you can win. It's all set up before we come in. But in a battle like this, you know you lose. Between me and you, who do you think they'll choose? Well, if you think it's you, I got bad news. Because I hear your name, you're gonna hear some moves. Cause you're faking the funk, cause you're faking the funk. And at the end of this rhyme, you can call me Uncle Modi Rock Shock the House. Call me Uncle Rock the House,
the
y'all.
House.
Like this, y'all. Like this, y'all.
Yeah.
Like this, this. It's like this, y'all. Now you popcorn peanut toy MCs. Never, ever, ever heard no rhymes like these. Cause my intent from the time I send is to say those rhymes that I invent. And for your pleasure, a rhyme you'll treasure. Please don't try cause you can't measure. The length or time can't touch the rhyme. Hip hop don't stop cause you know I'm an MC supreme and I'm one of a kind. If you search real hard, I'm sure you'll find. Ain't another MC who can rhyme like this. Not your mother or your father, aunt, brother or your sister. Sit back and enjoy, don't try to bite. Cause it's very hard to say any rhyme I write. But do it like this, do it like that. Concentrate real hard and get the rhyme down pat. No matter how hard you try, you'll see. You'll get your mind in the mind and can't say it like me. But you wanna be, Busy wanna be. Honey, know we wanna be another Kumo D. So let's all chant because you know you can. Everybody salute to the new MC champ. It's like this, y'all, like this, y'all, like this, this, it's like this, y'all. Now that ball did the ball, the dang, dang. Sound pretty good, but it ain't no thing. I'm the super scooper party pooper member.
Oh,
super
shit.
Super disco breaker bullet. Man will never make a mistake and rap alone. I'm not a bull. Baddest man you ever saw. Money making earthquake. A man who gets the party shaking.
You complicates the stimulation. Man who's gonna rock the nation. Rhyme, rhyme, battle time. My opponent, he's on mine. I'm not the baddest, not the maddest. When I win, I am the guy. No beginner, not a sinner. On the mic, I'm just a winner.
Very, very merry, merry. Every time I pop a cherry, yo, my God, it's fame and glory. But I never tell a story. Only time I'm from the mic because it's something that I like to reassure. The rhyme, the low, I always teach some sex and storm.
The baddest, bad, super bad, never sad, always glad. Rhyme the day you ride a hat. If you bet, I've never had. Sleek, sleek, so unique. Guaranteed to move your feet. So ladies, rock without a doubt. Guaranteed to turn it out.
Remember me, MC Modi, the man that's at the T.O.P. and ladies dream the way it seems when they see me. The eyes are gleaming, I'm so shocking when I'm rocking. Bound to get your fingers popping. Handle down, I turn it down because that's what party's all about.
Do it, right, do it, I don't need no thing.
All playing, girl laying on the mic, a rhyme saying, MC who rock viciously, satisfaction guarantee, or you get your money back, believe me, girl, it's not the whack. Treacherous three, as you can see, special case sunshine, and I'm Kumo D, signing off, y'all, from the south to the west, to the east, to the north, Busy B, my man, you know, I went off, but chill out, chill out, chill out, chill on out, chill out, chill out, chill out, chill on out, Busy B! Busy B, Busy B, Busy B, Starsky, I'm Kumo D, the best MC, and that's my trophy. Chill out, chill out, chill out, chill on out, chill out, chill out, chill out, chill on out.
And I just want all of y'all to know, that's why I'm on his dick. That's why I'm on Mo D dick.
Historic, historic moment in hip-hop and in rap music, period. But when myself and Troy Smith we're doing stories together. You know, I spoke recently in a lesson about how myself and Troy sat down with JDL and Grandmaster Caz, and we, you know, we extracted the whole Big Bang Hank story, and we did a couple stories on that. But we also sat down with LA Sunshine and Kumo D, and we got like all the backstory to the Busy B battle, because you know there were two battles. This was the first one that actually ended in a draw, but there was another one that's, you know, on reel-to-reel tape somewhere. But this is the one that everybody heard, and it's the first one. And it's a very long and convoluted story, but it's very interesting. Just like, you know, Mo D went into the bathroom before coming out to say this rhyme, and he put all this together in his head of how he was gonna, you know, come in and attack Busy, because Busy was standing up there, you know, doing his typical Ali bragging thing about the trophy's mine, you know, I'm taking out all bums, no MC can take me, whatever. And Mo, that wasn't something that he had prepared. He just, you know, right before going on, he put all this together in his head and just spit it out, which makes it even more magnificent than it already is. And if you go to foundationhiphop.com, I think if you click on stories, we got a few stories there, and the Hank and Cash story is there about Rapper's Delight, but the LA Sunshine and Mo D story about that night is also there. We got a really good story out of them on that. But, you know, in an additional interview that I did with Mo D, we were talking about that battle, and it's interesting. He said it was something that he regretted. Now, again, I'll read from the actual interview that I did with him. He said, the real secret that nobody knows is that I felt like shit after that. I felt like a bully. In my heart, I knew that he was no contest. He was a party MC. He was a master at his game, but not at this part of the game. So, he said that he really felt like, you know, he could have, you know, he was such a mismatch for Busy. This is Mo D talking, you know, he was so much more prominently lyrical than Busy that it was just wasn't fair. It was like an ambush. He felt like, this is Mo admitting that, you know, he felt like shit for doing that, which was very interesting. Now, again, I've had a couple conversations with Mo about battling, and he has some very, again, Mo approaches the whole art of MCing not only like an art, but again, on a very scholastic level. So he's got these theories the same way that Flash has these mix theories, Grandmaster Flash, the quick mix theory and backspinning and all these theories like a real scientist. Kumo D has these theories and these approaches to battling. And I'm going to read again from our interview about a conversation, or really an argument, that the Treacherous Three and the Furious Five got into. Once we got into an argument at Sugar Hill Records with Furious, just because of how my personality is, I said, listen, y'all got one MC. If we battle, it's going to be me and Mel. K could take two of y'all. LA will take on two of y'all because you're weak. I just wanted to insult them on the deepest level. I said, Cowboy and Scorpio, I haven't heard a whole rhyme between the two of you. LA can demolish you. Raheem and Creole, Raheem got a little bit of skill. Creole, I've been hearing the same rhyme since 77, so K can take out both of you. Mel is a poet, but he don't know how to battle. You're going to get crushed. I really think it hit home because they were so angry that they wanted to fight and everything. I was like, let's do it. I always brought a different analysis to the equation, even with the battles. I would take a person and break down their weaknesses and put it in rhyme form. And a lot of MCs don't know. There's a humor element to battling, an insult element, a truth element, and you can even add a spiritual or Afrocentric element like KRS does. When you put those together, it makes you multidimensional, and a lot of MCs think that it's just saying the hottest shit to make the crowd react. But there's so much more. That's why the best battle MCs in history of the game are KRS-One, Big Daddy Kane, Kaz, and myself. I see some new guys with potential, but the environment we're in right now doesn't allow them to fully show their wit. I always said that the reason LL can never win a battle is because he talks so much about himself that he can't talk about anything else. He uses charisma, energy, and vocabulary, which is basically a combination of my style, Tila Rock, and Run. But in battling, it's more. Like when I hit him with the L's, lower level, lackluster, etc. It was just insulting, but it had poetic value. So again, you know, Mo being involved in two huge battles in hip-hop. Now, a lot of cats can say they had two on the level of those. I mean, the first one changed the game and altered the battle game forever. A lot of people don't realize that. And the second one was one of the biggest, if not the biggest, industry battles. And I don't mean a beef on record like more modern-day stuff. The industry battles of two signed artists on major labels that we ever had. That's historic. But I'd like to get back to Mo D as a solo artist and how his solo career actually started. In 1985, The Treacherous 3 did a record called Gotta Rock. I've talked about it for the last 20 years online, and I've been talking about the record since 85 when it dropped, because lyrically, it just ushered in a new school of MCs, and a lot of MCs were inspired by that particular record. The A side was Gotta Rock, the B side was Turn It Up, which ended up being a Mo D solo record. One of my Inside the Rhymes is a breakdown of Gotta Rock. On my Treacherous 3 lesson, I talk about Gotta Rock. And it's just incredible record lyrically.
Party on the dance floor, party people, one more time to hear something from the Treacherous 3. Special K and L.A. Sunshine and the coolest of the cool, Mo D.
Innovator, fast rhyme inventor, perpetrators, know you all winter. My parties took notes and then you tallied your votes and voted me as the best because the rhymes that I wrote were so original. Cause I'm an entrepreneur in my poetic style of metaphor. I use a lot of cliches, vocabulary and ways that the interests of a listener always be caged. My rhymes are intricately woven like Beethoven symphonies for MCs. I go to a show when I'm the party site figure, the alpha and omega of rapping. I'm apt to really make mega bucks, but you ducks keep imitating me. 50% of rappers are clones of Mo D, trying to use big words so they can seem smarter, deepen their voices so they can rock harder. But to be a connoisseur, there's much more to it, and outside of me, not many can do it. So imitation rappers that are proving you soft, why don't you give me a break and just get off? Because no matter how hard you try, you'll see, although you might be cool, you're not Mo D, because it's getting out of hand and I can't ignore it. In 85, I'm not going for it.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, that verse was just, you know, it feels so redundant to talk about Gotta Rock so much, because, again, I've been talking about that record since I was a ninth grader. But and then I've talked about it on the internet so much. But to not talk about it on this piece doesn't feel right either, because this is the place to talk about it. But I still won't spend a lot of time because I've done it. You know, videos out there, me talking about it. But when he said my rhymes are intricately woven like Beethoven, you know, I was always the lyrical guy. I was always listening for that poetic value in MCs. So, you know, 85 is a pivotal year. We're a couple years away from what they dubbed the golden era. We're smack dab in the middle of the Beat Machine era. Sugar Hill Records, the label they recorded for, is about to fold because they haven't kept up with the times. LL is about a little less than a year in from making his debut with What I Need a Beat. Tila Rocks Is Yours is still relevant, and all these records are in the vein of Mo D's kind of style. In fact, if you fast forward a bit and go to Mo D's first album, his self-titled album, on the back he says special thanks to Tila Rock, Eric B and Rakim, LL Cool J for breaking my style of rap through. And that wasn't arrogance, there was a similarity in there. You could tell by this rhyme that Mo at this point is fed up in his rhyme. You know, he's saying that he's fed up with people imitating his style. Innovator, fast rhyme inventor. My party sick notes and then you tallied your votes, voted me as the best because the rhymes that I wrote were so original, because I'm an entrepreneur with my poetic style of metaphor. I use a lot of cliche vocabulary in ways that the interest of a listener always be caged. My raps are intricately roving like Beethoven symphonies for MCs. I go do a show. I'm the party site Vega, the alpha and omega of rap, and I'm out to really make mega bucks. But you ducks keep imitating me. 50% of rappers are clones of Mo D, trying to use big words so they can seem smarter, deepen their voices so they can rock harder. But to be a connoisseur, there's much more to it, and outside of me, not many can do it. Now, you gotta remember, I'm the kid that, you know, at pivotal times in this game, I just threw away my notebook damn near. And symbolically, I threw away my notebook and said, okay, I could do much more with these words. One of the times, the first times I did it was in 80, 81, when the Treacherous 3 were, you know, on a string of hot records at the party, Body Rock, Heartbeat. And they were doing something so lyrical along with the Furious that I said, okay, I can do a lot more with my words. And I just changed my whole thing. The next time was when Tila Rock did It's Yours, and I'm listening to his vocabulary, and I'm like, or the vocabulary that his brother Special K wrote for him. And I'm like, okay, I can do much more with these words. The next year was solidified again with Gotta Rock. You know, these were not, to put it in context of what was going on, 85, King of Rock album by Run DMC is dropped around that time. The Fat Boys are still enjoying the success of their debut album. Lyrically, people aren't calling themselves entrepreneurs. To be a connoisseur, there's much more to it. Literally, I went and bought a thesaurus to write my rhymes because I wanted my rhymes to be like these cats. You know, the same motivation. You know, LL was motivated by Is Yours. And when he made I Need a Beat, and if you go check my LL piece, I compare I Need a Beat and It's Yours, and I talk about the similarities in those records and how LL was so influenced by, you know, the writings of K and the vocal delivery of T. La Rock on Is Yours. So lyrically, some very special things came up out of the Treacherous Three. They were not a successful group as far as selling records. The very ironic part about the Treacherous Three was that they had probably more singles on Sugar Hill than most groups. More singles than the Furious Five and Grandmaster Flash had. People don't realize that Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five on Sugar Hill only did like 3 or 4 records as the original group. Then once the Message came, they didn't do anything else as the original, you know, incarnation of their group. Treacherous Three had a lot of singles, and then they had, you know, the compilation album on Sugar Hill, but they had a lot of singles, and they had quite a few singles on Enjoy, but they just weren't promoted for whatever the reason was. So they were not a successful recording group, but the influence of what they did poetically and stylistically, it carried over, and their DNA is in the blood of every lyrical MC that came after. You know, Mo was calling out, you know, very specific cats when he said, you know, 50% of y'all are clones of Mo D, trying to use big words so you can seem smarter, deepen your voices so you can rock harder. No matter how hard you try, you'll see you might be cool, but you're not Mo D. You know, clearly he was talking about LL at that point. And, you know, a lot of people think that the LL thing didn't really pop off until after I'm Bad. You know, when LL said the line about he was the greatest rapper in the history of rap itself. And Mo D took exception to that. But that was a shot, even that, you know, no matter how hard you try, you'll see, although you might be cool, you're not Mo D. Now, Mo D never said that to me. I never asked him about that. But my assumption, we're not supposed to assume, but is that that's the cool person that he was talking about, because LL had made a couple 12 inches by the time Gotta Rock came out. It's getting out of hand and I can't ignore it. In 85, I'm not going for it. So by that time, the group is breaking up. If you saw Graffiti Rock and you saw Mo D and Special K kind of hosting it, then they do a little little mock battle against Run DMC. But you notice L.A. Sunshine isn't there. He's not a part of the group anymore. He has some issues with the way business is being done, and he's refusing to record. So it is all is in the time span of Gotta Rock about to happen. So Mo gets L.A. to come in and do Gotta Rock. L.A. does it. The flip side is a song called Turn It Up. L.A. doesn't show up for the studio session. K shows up, but Mo told me that the rhyme that he put down, he just kind of came in and just put something down and just, you know, the rhyme wasn't tight. You know, it was kind of a throwaway verse and just wasn't executed well, is what Mo was saying. So it wasn't usable. So he just made it a solo song, and it was Turn It Up. Turn It Up was the birth of Mo D's solo career. Then came the stuff on Jive Records. But again, remember, Turn It Up is the record that I said it Gotta Rock did as well, but Turn It Up is the song that a lot of MCs listen to, and their rhyme patterns, it definitely influenced the rhyme patterns of a lot of cats.
Turn it up! Spirit, feel it, hear it. A metaphor for living, faith amplified when cause I take mine, then decode them, then erode them. Feed them information, program them and explode them. Blow them out of proportion, create distortion. Read the label and proceed with caution. Cause I'm on it, and I want it to put you in a trance, make it dance like you're in a coma. Cause you tried to go home a moment too slow, and now you can't go. What you're hearing has you staring, dancing, cheering, and comparing me to the others that do exploit this field in which I am so adroit. Cause other rappers on the sideline use me as a guideline. Take what I say, rewind, and combine what I'm saying with what they wanna say. And I guarantee they're gonna say something petty, cause they're not ready. I am real and they're confetti. My rhymes are legit, their rhymes are counterfeit. Their rhymes are miscellaneous, mine the opposite. If you're standing up, you're rocking. If you're sitting, you're on edge. If I put up a flag, I know you pledge allegiance to me. Kumo D, New York City, number one MC. You see, I have a talent I never lost. I might chill for a while, but I could never fall off. And even if I whisper, I'm always louder than any other rapper. And they'll say, how the hell does he do that? Then say, who's that? Rhyme is smoking, Mo D's not joking. Everybody screaming, cause the king has spoken. Say, turn it up! Say, turn it up!
Say, turn it up! There's a line when he said, I wanted to put you in a trance, make you dance like you're in a coma, cause you tried to go home a moment too slow, and now you can't go. Okay, again, coma, there are words that rhyme with it, aroma, there are other words. But again, he took one word, coma, and put two words together to rhyme with it. So he says you're in a coma cause you tried to go home a moment too slow, and now you can't go. And then he goes on into another whole rhyme pattern. It's very Rakim-ish. And the funny thing is that when I say this to people, because they're more familiar with the Kumo D from, you know, maybe Go See the Doctor, but definitely from How You Like Me Now and, you know, I Go to Work and some of the more commercial records that he made, you know, with Jive Records. They look at me like I'm crazy when I say that. But if you go back to the DNA of this, and the history's all there on the records, and that's the root of that. There was another line on that same record where, Turn It Up, where Mo D said, even if I whisper, I'm always louder than any other rapper. And they'll say, how the hell did he do that? Then say, who's that? Rhyming, smoking, Mo D's not joking. That whole cadence was something that really hadn't been done before. But people didn't pay as much attention to Gotta Rock. It was on Sugar Hill Records, on the last legs of Sugar Hill about to go out. LL was hot. You know, that whole next school that had come out, you know, back in, you know, the first part of the 80s, 83, 84, was still hot. So it really didn't get examined to its fullest. Even when Mo D started to really get big on the solo tip with Go See the Doctor, he employs this technique an awful lot in this song, and I caught this early on. He said one line, he said, I'll put it down if you want me to put it, but don't blame me if it turns into a foot extended from the middle of your body. I mean, he rhymed put it with foot extended. I mean, that's next level. He's doing something very poetic at that point. And, you know, we were bopping our head to the beat. I think that was a Teddy Riley beat, and it was a catchy song. So we may not have really recognized the lyrical complexities going on in that song. But he said, I'll put it down if you want me to put it, but don't blame me if it turns into a foot extended from the middle of your body. And the next time you see a cute hottie, you won't be able to screw. The only thing you can do is just kick her. So go take karate. Now, again, Mo did Turn It Up on his own. Mo was tinkering with the drum machines. You know, the band had basically left Sugar Hill Records. So the house band that I talk about on most of my lessons that involve anything with Sugar Hill Records. So, you know, the Treacherous Three are producing Gotta Rock on their own. And then Mo D is programming the drum machine and doing a production on Turn It Up. But he had other productions that he did at Sugar Hill. So songs like Dumb Dick and Bad Mother and Do You Know What Time It Is, although they appeared on his debut solo album on Jive Records, the original demos were made right there in Sugar Hill Studios at Sugar Hill Records.
Do you know what time it is? Girlies are partying, touching my body and talking to me like I'm a kindergarten. Today she's on mine, tomorrow she's on his. But don't worry about me, because I know what time it is. Time to get mine while you try to get yours. I'll get my paws in those silky drawers. Try to take me to the cleaners and I got a trick, because all you're ever gonna get is a piece of my did-a-did-a. Didn't you know that my girly motto is easy to come and harder to go? Hope you got a good heart and you're a good sport, because I'm gonna treat you like we were on a basketball court. I'm gonna run you around, take you up and down, turn you out and leave you in the lost and found. So if you wanna be down, then listen up, miss, before you're dealing with me, you better know what time it is. Do you know what time it is? Do you know what time it is?
Tell me, do you know?
Do you know what time it is?
Tell me, do you know?
Do you know what time it is? Some girlies are pretty, some girlies are fine, but most girly girlies like to play with your mind. They like sporting new gold and riding in cars, and most of them did it, don't care who you are. They're materialistic and unrealistic, and to most of them, you're nothing but... Steez, I want you to know, if you ever want to battle me, don't move slow. Come and get it, cause I'm waiting, and I got nowhere to go. Head to head, toe to toe, rhyme for rhyme, blow for blow, we can throw, we can throw. Say, is he really human or is he a robot? Because when I'm on a microphone, nobody does the things that I do. My voice will guide you. Once you hear it, it stays inside you. Hypnotizing and mesmerizing the cerebral cortex. But without realizing, you become confused and so enthused. Because the rhymes I use can make you lose total control. And if I choose to call you the paper boy, you'll spread the news like Paul Revere. A real rapper is here. Yes, Mo D is coming. Mo D is coming. Yeah, teeth will chatter. Plagiarists will scatter. Nothing is the matter. You're just looking at a real rap trooper with a power so super. After battling me, I guarantee you won't recuperate. Because I'm great. I can make you hate to ever look in the mirror and affiliate yourself with anything but an average person. Loving my success, but envious and cursing. You want my autograph? Don't act like a sucker. Just give me a pound, because I'm a bad, bad, bad motherfucker.
Now, around that time that Mo D is about to make his exit from Sugar Hill, and he's doing some writing and producing, again, you have to remember, Mo was the one that, the moment that he saw Mel do that rhyme way back in 78 at the Autobahn, he knew he'd do this for the rest of his life. What he said was the rest of the members of the group, K wasn't around yet, but L.A. was there. He said that they weren't as passionate. They were like, okay, yeah, it was cool. And the way he worded it was that they liked hip hop, but he loved it. So his passion was always a little stronger for it. And he stayed with it. And, you know, that fruit, you know, was that solo fruit that went from 87 on was, you know, a result of that. The work that he put in, and he really believed in the music and that he could do something bigger with it. But I say all that to say that while he was at Sugar Hill, he was doing a lot of work. And the way that he described it was that the rest of the group members just weren't into it. So he wrote a song called A Downbeat. By this time, the Sugar Hill gang had totally splintered. They were still recording records, but Master G had left and went to Atlantic Records and done something solo. And then after that, left the music business. Wonder Mike and Hank were still there. But a few of the records that they made, they had a new member, Choreo, who was a cat from Jersey that was actually nice on the mic. And a few Sugar Hill records, like back in those last days, they didn't even have Wonder Mike and Hank on. They were basically Choreo solo records. But the Downbeat was a record that Mo D released as a solo record. And it was done in the vein of I Need a Beat or Is Yours type record. You know, one of the few Sugar Hill records that had a lot of scratching and heavy drum machines in those last days. There's only a handful. Busy Bee's Groove, some of Mel's Faction, you know, Pump Me Up, Step Off, and then, you know, of course, Gotta Rock. But a lot of this stuff was still kind of dated, you know, by 85, and they were on the way out anyway. But very interesting, the Downbeat, Mo had a version of it, but the Sugar Hill Gang also had a version of it, with Choreo, you know, saying the vocals, but you can still hear some of Mo D's voice in the actual song. Very interesting.
downbeat. Get on the downbeat. False alarm, there is no fire. The smoke you're seeing comes from my astonishing rhythm combined with the beat. My voice is the smoke, my rhymes are the heat. Correlated in sequence, ready to burst with flavor, a party saver. But first note, my rhymes are potent, ready to combust, flammable to bite us. So my advice is just to play it. Get on the downbeat. If you wanna be down, you gotta get it down. Because if the beat ain't pumped, then the rap's obsolete. In order to be complete or solid as concrete, you gotta funk them and pump them with the funky, funky downbeat. Down the street, rocking my beat, clapping my hands and stomping my feet. I saw a little lady so neat and petite. She was so sweet, yes, I wanted to meet her. So I asked this lady, could I take her out? We could wine and dine and talk about the birds and the bees in my water bed. And you could treat me like a Buddha and bow your head. We continued to talk, and before you knew it, we were at my house and it was time to do it. As soon as I finished, I lost my poise, ran outside and told all my boys. I said, listen up, fellas, come over here, bust it. They said, did you get it? I said, yeah. They said, how was it? The boontang was dope, and you know that I rocked her. But 3 days later, go see the doctor. I rocked her to the left, rocked her to the right. She felt so good, hugged me so tight. I said, good night. 3 days later, woke up fussing, yelling and cussing, drip, drip, dripping and puss, puss, pussing. I went into the bathroom and said, mamma mia, I'ma kill that girl next time I see ya. The madder I got, the more I reminisce. Why is my thing burning like this? Well, I remember the first day I saw that girl. I just couldn't wait to rock her world. I said, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? What have I done stuck my duckin'? Now I know why her ex-boyfriend Dave calls her Mrs. Microwave. Cause she was hotter than an oven, and I had to learn the hard way. Stay in a microwave too long, you get burned. But the poontang was dope, and you know that I rocked her. But 3 days later, go see the doctor.
When I talked to Mo about go see the doctor, he said something of interest. He said that in his career, when he, you know, he made a distinction between the MC and the rapper. He didn't make a really hard one like what a lot of people do today. You know, you can't say rapper around cats, so they'll, you know, they'll correct you. Oh, it's MC, and they'll tell you these great differences. And I get it, but he doesn't get into the semantics of that. But what he did say was that when he plays the role of MC and he's trying to come up with these, you know, incredible poetic rhymes, you know, for his whole career, it never went anywhere. And he said, when I dumbed it down and played the role of the rapper and said the most basic thing in the world, I was walking down the street, rocking my beat, clapping my hands and stomping my feet. He was like, that's so elementary for me. But that's the thing that took off, and that's what got him in the stratosphere. That was his first hit record. You know, the record that got him, you know, sitting in front of Donnie Simpson and people like that, you know. So interesting that that's the one that got him the press and got him the actual record deal. You know, he released that on Rooftop, the independent label that was connected to the legendary New York club. And from there, you know, they got distribution through Jive Records. And I talk a lot about Jive and how they distributed a lot of independent artists from E-40 and Too Short to Schoolie D and, you know, so many cats, the Skinny Boys. So many cats had their own labels and parlayed it into a distribution deal with Jive. They probably more than any other major label just created all these partnerships with cats who did their own successful out of the trunk, you know, groundwork of their own. So I thought Mo D had a solid debut album. Definitely Go See the Doctor was the highlight. You know, Teddy Riley on production on that, you know, his signature at that time, keyboard and synthesizer sounds. You know, Rap's New Generation had that same sound. The stuff he did on Spoonie G's album, The Hitman, and a couple other songs he did on, I think he did like the Mike Tyson song that was on Spoonie G's Tough City album, The Godfather of Rap. All had that signature Teddy Riley sound. the stuff he did with B-Fats, all of it had that heavy keyboard sounds before Guy and after Kids at Work. You know, Teddy was a young cat who was, you know, hanging out in clubs that he was probably too young to be in, Fever and Harlem World and different places. And he was producing for a lot of rap acts. You know, he did some stuff. You go check my Dougie Fresh lesson. You know, he did some production, or Doug said on the demo of the show. I'm not exactly sure how it went, but he was involved in the show and just, you know, a lot of rap records that he had some involvement in the early days. But when we got to Mo's second album, you know, and you heard also on, I think it was The Best, you know, you heard another shot that could have been an LL or Run, but probably more so LL when he talked about rappers, you know, selling records, but just, you know, basically yelling. So then it intensifies with the How You Like Me Now album, especially the cover with the infamous Kango under the tire of his Jeep, which, of course, the Kango was LL's trademark. And we all know of How You Like Me Now. Again, another Teddy Riley production. That was the one that really broke him through. That was the one that got him on Soul Train and got him, you know, through all those doors. That's really the one that got him in front of Donnie Simpson. But the genesis and the start of all that, you know, if it wasn't for Go See the Doctor, you wouldn't have had a chance to for a How You Like Me Now album and single. But one of the controversial things on the How You Like Me Now album was on the insert sleeve, there was a report card. And, you know, Mo was just being Mo. Again, I have to stress it for the third or fourth time. Mo was a lyricist and poet, and that's how he approaches rap. That's how he listens to rap. He sees the beat secondary and the lyrics primary. So some people that he rated did not appreciate how he rated them. Haven't had a chance to talk to Kool Keith and confirm, but Ultra Magnetic was rated pretty low, and I don't think they appreciated, you know, the rating. And many years later, like early 90s, they had a record called Busta Facts, and throughout it, you know, Keith is taking shots at Mo, and I always thought it was attributed to this this report card that had come out, you know, 4 or 5 years earlier. And he also rated the Boogie Boys very low. And rest in peace to my man, Boogie Night Kid Delight. We talked about that quite a bit. But they made a response record to Mo. You know, these diss records, you know, they go back. They have a history. You know, we know about the Bridge Wars and all these other disses, but there were a couple disses flying around that we didn't catch when they were originally out.
From the south to the west, to the east, to the north, KMD. Something I gotta speak on, I gotta speak on, I gotta speak on. Now there's something I gotta speak on, God, I gotta speak on, I gotta speak on. KMD, I'm screaming on you. My name is Boogie Knight from the Boogie Boy Crew. Home piss, you're dope, but I must admit your judgments on the boys are illegitimate. On your report card, we got a low score, but you're on your own tip. Your words not law, got the nerve to say I'm all versatile when we rap and sing. You must be wild, nigga, please, to you, no credit is due. The rap world doesn't revolve around you. Our records are better than the ones you made, and even though we didn't get stupid paid, survival of the freshers was a masterpiece in creativity and versatility, and most of all in originality. Check out the rap called Colorblind World. The words and rhymes made a scholar say twirl. KMD are for your own concern. Now take notes, home piss, look, listen, and learn. I know you, I see you, I can't believe you got beside yourself like that, nigga. Please just got on the chart and you're talking. We had an album and a single that went top 10. The next time you judge, you better look real deep compared to whatever we do.
You're weak, 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 weak.
And now we gonna do what you do, but do it much better than you. Hit 'em with the colorblind, hit 'em with the colorblind, hit 'em with the colorblind world rap wrong.
Discriminators, perpetrators, educators, legislators, dominators, people haters, known as segregators. Candle burning, clock turning, growing over, no one learning. Romeo, and yes, I know that there's another way to go.
Take a look from God above, this is the way I'm thinking of. Rearrange, make a change, trying to make a fair exchange.
Harmonize, socialize, look into a child's eyes.
Hope it's not a big surprise, people can't realize. South to the west, to the east, to the north, KMD, a step off.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Yo, I'm tired, man. Time to break. Word. yes, y'all, and you don't stop. You're listening to the sounds of the best MC in the world.
Keith.
I got a fly in my hand, bam, bottle with cold crush. The place is packed with Johnny Juan, Ray Vaughn. Lovely lady smelling sweet with a lot of Avon. Jazzy J by my side, Charlie Chase behind me. Flashing Theodore, supercuts sublime me. Catch a groove as the rhythm, spinning back and forth. From the east in the valley, swinging back up north toward the South Bronx. South you see the park in Webster. The speakers are pumping, power bass is thumping. With the ultra mega amp, keeping pep up, jumping. From side to side, then double meters a peak. They had some good MCs, a lot of them they was weak. They had no style and no metaphor, their voice to speak. Melly Mel had the best rhymes, ranking with Cass. Kumo tried to get down, but I made him sit down. With that metaphor quickness, you're biting your bit. This stop and go turn, see the flame and go burn. To ashes, dust to dust. 7 years later, toy, you're still crusty crust. Your old rhymes are rust, very dirty and dusty. And under your arms, you're kicking power and musty. Get out of my way and let the rhythm path roll. Let me run up the charts. Freak a rhyme, turn gold while you're listening. I throw a buzz in your ear, bust a fact.
Both the production and songwriting was greatly improved on Mo D's second album, How You Like Me Now. Well, the first album was more of a collection of rhymes, and it seemed like he was more making a point, or maybe trying to prove a point that, look, you know, I still got it on this mic. I'm from the first generation, but, you know, it's 86, 87. I can still do this. With the exception of Go See the Doctor and maybe Do You Know What Time It Is from the first album, which again went all the way back to the Sugar Hill days. Do You Know What Time It Is went all the way back to the Sugar Hill days. The actual idea and demo recording went back that far. But outside of those two songs, you know, his songs had structure and hooks on the first album, but it just didn't seem like he put a lot of time into trying to make them catchy or commercial. And, you know, as rap albums were back then, we still in 86, 87, when that album dropped, or the single dropped in 86, Go See the Doctor, and then the album in 87, we weren't putting a lot of time, if any, most of the time, into trying to pull in a mainstream crowd. The most you would go for is maybe, again, that video soul type thing. Like, you know, you had groups like the Boogie Boys, who would sing and rap, and their stuff was very musical. So some of their stuff, you know, it walked that line of pleasing the streets because it had really hard beats, but it also had harmony and singing so they could get some daytime radio play. But that's as much as we were going to cross over during that time. So understandably, Mo D's first album was a message to other MCs and a message to people who may have thought that he was old school and he had fallen off or whatever the case was. The second album, much more was put into that album, into How You Like Me Now. Listening to the lead single, How You Like Me Now, very, very musical, not just sampling James Brown, but actually Teddy playing or replaying some James Brown riffs over top. Very catchy, hit the radio like wildfire when it first dropped. The Wild Wild West, again, Teddy Riley with those signature synthesizer keyboard lines. Really nice video, which still, even in 87, rappers still didn't have a lot of times videos at all, but they still didn't have good videos with a good storyline behind them. A lot of times they were just performance clips of, you know, them on stage somewhere, or just, you know, them just lip syncing whatever song it was without any kind of script being put to it. You know, Wild Wild West had a script put to it, and you saw some familiar faces in there. I think Mike C from the Fearless Four was in that video. We may have seen LA Sunshine, who, again, his former partner from the Treacherous Three, that was a backup dancer for him live when he went solo. And you also see him on a couple videos. I think he was on Respect, definitely on How You Like Me Now. So again, nice concept video there, you know, costumes, background, you know, it really looked like they were in a Western, you know, almost shootout type thing, advanced at the time for a rap video. So there seemed to be a conscious effort to be a little more, not necessarily commercial, but definitely to say, okay, we've graduated to, you know, we got the streets here on the first album, you know, 87, you know, it's been proven that rappers can sell a certain amount of units. You know, let's get some of that, you know, and they did it with integrity, again, satisfying the ear of the streets and those who are listening for lyrics and things of that nature, but also going after my parents' generation, not necessarily going after them, but making something that they could digest that was a little more musical and rhythmic and melodic than the era before with the drum machines and scratching.
I throw my tape on, then I watch you 3 seconds later. I got you shaking your head, dancing instead of sitting. The rhymes kick, the beat's hitting you just like a home run, slamming like a slam dunk. Ride the wave, James Brown, Ray Funk, it happened to James like it happened to me. How you think it feel to see another MC get paid? Using my rap style, and I'm playing the background. Meanwhile, I ain't with that, you can't forget that. You took my style, I'm taking it back, coming back like Return of the Jedi. Sucker MCs in the place that said I could only rock rhymes and only rock crowds, but never rock records. How you like me now? How you like me now?
Yeah, again, and not to beat a dead horse, but that signature Teddy Riley, the bounce that he had to his keyboards, so reminiscent of the three or four songs he did on Spoonie G's Tough City album. For those who aren't familiar with the fact that Teddy produced tracks on that album, that was a very good album that Godfather Rap. But the joints that Teddy produced was very, very obvious because a couple of them, they contain that signature keyboard bounce, as well as, like I said, Rap's New Generation and that stuff that Teddy was doing, you know, early on in his rap stuff, again, long before Guy was in the picture. And just listening to those lyrics from How You Like Me Now, it kind of reinforces what I was saying about the graduation on this album to proving the MCs that he could rhyme, but also trying to, you know, trying to get some of that record money. And the line that he said, sucker MCs in the place that said I could only rock rhymes and only rock crowds, but never rock records. how you like me now. Basically saying, look, you know I can rock the crowd. You know the stage show. You know the Treacherous Three pedigree with the routines. And you know it with the rhymes. But we never sold any records. And I'm coming now to show you that I can do that. And that's what he did. You know, it got him to the highest heights that you could as an MC at the time. Now, I'm not going to dwell too much on that album, which I call his breakthrough album, but I would like to say one of the songs I listened to a lot was 50 Ways for a couple of reasons. I thought it was a very unique song. The drum programming was very, for the time, very different. It wasn't your typical, you know, drum pattern. It was kind of this rolling, stuttering, like, I'll play it and you can see what I'm talking about. It was almost like this marching band type of, you know, type of flow to the drum, like a stuttering. And, you know, he was throwing in the Bob Dylan 50 Ways line, which was very reminiscent of a Cold Crush routine at that time. They had a 50 Ways, and it was done to the rhythm of the Bob Dylan song. So I always felt like that was kind of his throwback or dedication on that album to the old school in a way, without being too overt about it. I thought it was a dope song.
Fifty ways.
Digging the scene with the gangsta lean, always clean, and my rap is mean. The biggest fiend you've ever seen. Can you relate? Do you know what I mean? I got money to flaunt, and I always get what I want. I got 50 ways to get you. The erogenous zone of the female species attracting to me, and if not, at least she's stimulated to a point where she sees something intriguing. But to me, she's just suppressing her inner thoughts. Your physical drive can't be fought. I got 50 ways to get you.
50 ways.
I'll ask you for a play today, and if you say no, it's okay, cause I'll just sit back and lay, cause it's a matter of time. Cause if I wanna be with ya, I'll take my money and bet ya. If I really, really want ya, I can get ya by the end of this rhyme. I'll take your mind on a mental trip to a place you've never been. Make you see things in a way you never thought possible. And then I'll change the game plan, reverse the role. Sit back and let you take control. I got 50 ways.
So the infamous battle with LL Cool J, of course, that's what Mo D is known for. You know, to be very truthful about it. I mean, anytime he's brought up, and we start reminiscing about Mo D and some of his great accomplishments and great things that happened in his career, you can't get around the Busy B battle. But to most people, the LL battle is definitely a defining moment in his whole history. I'm not going to go back and forth and play everybody's responses. You know, we all remember the battle, and really not a battle. And I'll get into that. I do want to discuss the back and forth between them two, but I don't want to have to play every record and analyze. You know, people have their decision or their opinion on who they think won, and mine is maybe a little different because I look at it a little differently. And I'll start by saying that it wasn't a battle, and I'm not saying that just to split hairs, but in a traditional sense of a battle, it wasn't. You know, LL said some things on record that Mo D didn't like. You know, Mo D has said publicly that it was mainly the line, never retire, I put my mic on the shelf, the baddest rapper in the history of rap itself. That was, I'm bad, and that was what, 88, 87? But you can see that before that, there was some static there, again, on those records where he said, although you might be cool, you're not Mo D. I'm pretty confident that was a dig at LL. Again, I never talked to Mo about it. We talked about LL a lot, but I just never asked him about that line because it was very clear to me that that's who he was talking about on Gotta Rock. And then even on some other songs that I play here, you know, you could tell, like, songs from the first album that it could have been a swipe at L. And these were things that were said by Mo D before LL said the line about, you know, the baddest rapper in the history of rap itself. Now, it could very well be that Mo already had an issue with him because LL was very arrogant upon coming in the game, you know, and that's just, I could see that just from, you know, the fan point of view, being on the other side of the television and the radio. So I can imagine the people that came into his circumference. So that could have been the last straw for Mo. When he heard him say that line, maybe, you know, Mo felt like, okay, because, you know, Mo said publicly, look, that line just sounded like he was discounting and belittling everything that came before him. And then it was on after that. Again, it can go under the tire, and then, you know, the song How You Like Me Now, and, you know, LL's responses. Now, again, these industry things, these battles, once records became a thing in rap, you know, after the last part of 79, and once records started doing well, when MCs address each other on records, I don't consider that a battle. And I know we use the word battle, and again, I'm not trying to split hairs. I don't consider that a battle. I consider that people making response records about each other. The thing that taints that, and that taints the way you judge that, and I've had this conversation with people over the years, is, you know, you're not just, you know, in the arena of battles before records, it was a lot more fair and a lot more easy to judge, because a lot of times cats was rhyming over the same beat, the same way they do with the Jamaican dancehall style, and they're doing their chatting, and they're, everybody is doing their thing over the same, what you call rhythm, the same track. You know, you would see these cats battling in the Jamaican dancehall, and you hear the same track the whole time. Kind of like on Wild Style, where everybody rhymes off of the same track. You have an equal playing field because nobody has the advantage of, oh, the crowd liked your beat better, so, you know, they voted you the winner based on your beat or your song. You know, everybody has the same backdrop to rhyme over. That was how it was at that point. Once records became popular, if you had the right producer and the right song, your lyrics would take a backseat, especially to people in the mainstream that's not checking for lyrics. You know, those of us that's checking for lyrics are judging this thing on a way different scale than those who are just shaking their ass to the song. And with that being said, I'd say that LL definitely made the better songs in the battle. Some of his biggest songs, specifically Jack the Ripper, came out of that back and forth between them two. I would say that Mo D's misstep was using Teddy Riley on some of his answers, because it made Mo's tracks, and Mo was saying some real dope stuff, especially on when he hit him with the L's, the lower luster, you know, that whole line, you know, that's the most quotable thing from that. Too many of the records that were Mo D's responses were like dance records, like Let's Go, I Go to Work, you know, those were big radio records for Mo D, but they were very danceable. It's almost something that, you know, MC Hammer could have performed off of. And then, you know, Mo was into the dancing on the videos and stuff. So what it gave the more urban element was, we don't want to see you, you know, you're Mo D. We know you for your rhymes, and it's cool that you do your dance steps on How You Like Me Now, but this is a battle, and it's a battle with LL. We want to hear you come with your best rhymes. And he gave dope rhymes, but the music made it like something that they play in a club, and they did. You know, they did play those records in the club. Well, Jack the Ripper's not going to be played in the club. Nobody's dancing off Jack the Ripper. Everybody's listening very intently to what LL is saying. So I thought definitely in the battle, Mo D held his own with his rhymes, and he said some incredible stuff. But I was, and the funny thing is, just like Mo, I'm cut from that same cloth where I see the music as secondary. I'm listening for the rhyme first. But because of the time we were in, you know, by the time they were still going back and forth, you know, late 80s going into the 90s, by that time, rap is very song driven. Even for those of us who are lyricists and checking for lyrics, we also are very much into the songs. And LL had the better songs in that back and forth. And again, I think Mo D should have took it back to the streets with his production. And I think that it would have been a better balanced result in those who say, whoever that they say was the winner or the victor in that battle. What I find is cats who are Treacherous 3 fans and go back to the days of old school tapes and routines, they say that Mo D took it. People who are more, you know, they started listening to rap after Run DMC and they are not familiar with the original era, they go more for saying that LL took it. So that's my take on the LL Mo D battle. You know, a great moment in history for sure. Showed the relevance of Mo D again, a cat that started rhyming in 77, and by 87, he's still going back and forth with the Giants, and he's holding his own with the Giants, you know, very well. That is a lot to be said for that. It's not a lot of cats. 10 years don't sound like a lot in other genres of music, but in rap, that's a long time. A lot of cats that were doing things in 77 were not on any level to be heard of trying to go against anybody from that next generation 10 years later. They just wouldn't have been able to do it. They wouldn't have been able to adapt their style to the new cadences or just address the cats in any kind of way that was, you know, modern. And Mo D was able to do that.
Took a brother's life with a knife as his wife cried, cause he died of trifling death. When he left his very last breath, was I slept, so watch your step. Back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gang bang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man, cause that's
self-destruction. Yeah.
Self-destruction, one of the most important rap songs ever, in my opinion. A good song on its own. The production was dope, the rhymes were dope, but the subject matter and the fact that it was an actual movement, the Stop the Violence movement, the top cats in the game put their egos to the side, and the fact that they were a star and all of this stuff and came together to address something that was important, I thought that was, again, one of the most important records in the genre. And I thought that Mo D had one of the most quotable and standout verses in there, amongst many quotable and standout verses. Yeah, MC Light, I think that LL wrote her part, but you know, MC Light, when she's, you know, funky, fresh, dressed, impressed, ready to party, most importantly, you ain't guarding the door, so what you got a gun for? That was a quotable. That's one of those that everybody ran with. Heavy D's line, they call us animals, I don't agree with them, I prove them wrong, but right is what you're proving them. All those were quotable, but the most quotable and dope and realistic and true line was, back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gangbang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man. That was one of them quotables. I talked in the Chuck D piece about how real it is when you can make a rhyme or a line in your rhyme that's not only a dope line or a dope rhyme, but it can be used in everyday occurrences where people make it just a part of the popular culture. And that's what happened with that. You know, when we would look, you know, during that crack epidemic, and every other day we had 3 and 4 murders on the news, you know, we just look at each other, you know, I never have a ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man. That hands down, I think Mo took it, the cleverness of that rhyme, the realness of that rhyme, and just the common damn sense of that rhyme. I think Mo D said the most important line on the song with that particular line. Very, very effective and dope, and stands the test of time. Now, it's interesting in talking to Mo, you know, I asked him, because I seen a picture on his, I believe it was on the How You Like Me Now album, he had a collage of pictures, and on one of them he had a koofy on his head. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, that's something that a lot of conscious brothers that accepted Islam were wearing. And I asked him about his consciousness at the time, and he said that I was always there, but I just didn't think it could be done in rap. And he said, once, you know, the Public Enemies and X-Clans and people like that, you know, KRS-One, once he, you know, kind of changed his style to being a little more out front with his consciousness, he was like, that was great for him, because that's what he would have liked to have done from the beginning. That's one thing about Mo too, which is different than a lot of his contemporaries back at the time from that original time period. He was always an embracer of whatever was current at the time. I mean, there's a lot of cats from his era that wouldn't have been able to be on the Stop the Violence record with those guys, because they had too much of an axe to grind. They were a lot of them cats were bitter. Now, I say in my lessons all the time that a lot of the bitter cats had a right to be bitter, because they started something that they did not benefit from, financially, and they saw the world benefit from it, and it's something that they, that's very provable that this is their thing that they started and influenced. And it's easy to say, well, that's their fault, they should have done this, and that's just how the cookie crumbles, blah, blah, blah. But you've never invented something when you're talking that kind of stuff. You know, when you invent something from scratch that didn't exist before you, you know, before you brought it to fruition, into reality, until you do that, you really shouldn't talk on that level about, you know, well, that's just how it goes, that, you know, we can't do nothing about that, that's their fault. They have a right to be bitter, but at the same time, a lot of their bitterness made it where they couldn't work with artists and movements outside of the era that they reigned in. Mos Def was able, even though he had his beef with L, it didn't prohibit him from rubbing shoulders with some of the biggest in the game. And he said that his favorite era was that era of the late 80s, the so-called golden era. He said that his romantically favorite era was definitely, you know, 78, 79, seeing the three MCs, you know, doing the Chitlin' circuit, Harlem World, Disco Fever, Club Circuit. But his favorite era was that conscious era. He said he always wanted to go there, but he just didn't think that it could be done. And when it was actually, you know, you were able to do it, he jumped right in. And because of, you know, time concerns, I can't go through all of those songs, but like he did Rise and Shine with KRS-One and Chuck D, which was a big record for him. And, you know, Funky Funky Wisdom, that album, that was a album where, you know, he really, the whole thing was just, you know, a lot of knowledge of self, knowledge of culture. And in that conscious era, Mos Def was very present. And you could tell that he had been kind of waiting in the wings because he fit into that era very, very well. And he had some other commercial hits. I thought that They Want Money was a very good song. It should have been bigger than it was. It was big for the time, but I thought Teddy's production on it was great. I thought the subject matter was great. A lot of cats had rapped about gold diggers. And Mo had done it on Do You Know What Time It Is, but he just took it to another level on They Want Money. And I think at a point, you know, everybody has their window of how long they're relevant for. Despite the fact that I said, you know, he existed in three eras like Dougie did. Dougie, because of his stage presence, Dougie has been able to ride a wave where he don't got to make records. You know, I don't know when the last time Doug made an album, and he don't need to. He can still tour off of past hits and just the stage presence. Everybody has their time, their zenith. And I think after a while, I still would say that Mo's production and choice of continuing to work with Teddy as heavy as he did, especially on some of his lead singles like They Want Money, I think it hurt him when rap started going a little more hardcore, especially in the 90s, you know, when you had the backpack rap, as they want to call it. But at the same time, Mo never took a misstep lyrically. There were reunions in there. You know, you had the Old School Flavor album that they recorded on Easy Lee, on his label, which, of course, Easy Lee, the one of the Treacherous Three's DJs, had his own label. He put out the Fearless Four, a full-length album, put out the Treacherous Three, and he put out a full-length album on Kool Mo Dee on, I think it was called Prelude, and that was on Easy Lee Records. The Raiders of the Lost Art project from the 90s, you know, the Treacherous Three made an appearance. And, you know, of course, Kool Mo Dee still, you know, still tours live and you know, has a career doing that, speaks at colleges and, you know, and lectures and things like that. So I hate that I can't go into his discography like I do some other artists, but his discography is a little bigger than a lot of his contemporaries from his time period. You know, he has quite a few joints. And my intention with this piece was not to do a discography, but more to show you some things about Mos Def that you perhaps didn't know or are not as available, you know, out there. You know, you Google Mos Def, you're going to see plenty of How You Like Me Now. You're going to see plenty of LL versus Mos Def. You're going to see some LL versus Busy B, but you're not going to necessarily get some of the information that's been presented here. And I take pride in trying to present things that are, you know, a little more under the surface. I like to, you know, be a little more of an archaeologist than, you know, just what you can Google on your own. You know, I spoke before when I did my piece on Grandmaster Caz about influence. I said Caz's legacy was one of influence. You know, he didn't make hit records, but he influenced a lot of cats that made hit records that are considered top-tier lyricists. Melly Mel, who was another one of the three, you know, that they put together as that first lyrical trinity from the great groups. Mel, he had the records and influence. Mel had the records before there was a real rap industry. I mean, Mel helped build it. Literally, he helped build the rap industry, had huge hits way before, you know, this industry became what it was, and had that same influence of Kaz, you know, even bigger influence, where he just influenced so many cats that became greats. And then, well, Mo D, his is one of influence as well, but he straddles the line of having the great influence and influence in so many cats that became great. Again, if you listen to the Rakims and the Kool G Raps and the Big Daddy Canes, when they speak, they usually speak of these three brothers, Kaz, Mel, and Mo D. So Mo's influence is definitely there as far as influencing, you know, Rakim and his style. It influences so many giants in the genre that became, you know, who they were lyrically. But also, Mo D sold a lot of records and was able to put himself in a lot of positions, like I said, Stop the Violence movement, collaborating with Chuck and KRS, and being present in different eras. So he holds both of those distinctions. And he did it very well. Again, a cat that caused me to change my whole style. One of the first influential lyrical groups, like I said, right along with the Furious Five. And very interesting that they had the history that they did that we just didn't know about back then. If you were a New Yorker, specifically one who was hitting those clubs in that Chitlin' Circuit of clubs, then you would have seen it up front. But for the... you know, the rest of the country and world who were just hearing records, you would have never known that, oh shit, you know, it got a little hectic between the Furious Five and the Treacherous Three. So those were the first two influential groups for me that, again, made me say more can be done with these words than what's been on these rap records. You know, a lot of the rap the first rap records, they were fun. You know, our parents' generation, who didn't necessarily like rap, they embraced those a little more because they came out of the tradition of, you know, partying and throwing your hands in the air, and, you know, had the same musical background as the funk and disco and soul of the day. But those two groups, the Furious and the Treacherous, they brought something lyrically where it was a different tier and influenced a lot of us in a different way. So I hope you found that educational and entertaining and all those good things. You can hit me on all social media, JayQuanVA, JayQuanVA. I'm still having people ask me how can they donate. They like what they hear, and, you know, they check out the podcast, and you can just Google whatever your favorite podcast is. You can get these on podcasts, and people, you know, they follow it and they want to donate and help out, and I as much appreciate it. And you can donate at Cash App. JayQuan1, $JayQuan1, JayQuanone. PayPal is my email address, JayQuanMusicVA@gmail.com. And then for those who want to do an ongoing donation, it's patreon.com/JayQuan. Peace and respect.